Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research, and we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show, and it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.
You're watching Network Radio. Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. For those who might want to call after the first half of the show, the number is 717-300-1698. 717-300-1698. For those of you who are following the returns, which I would expect to be a rather large percentage, Donald Trump has defeated Marco Rubio in Florida by 20 points. Marco Rubio's campaign appears to have come to an abrupt halt, notwithstanding all of his pronouncements about victory in Florida and that how he would be the candidate. In North Carolina, Donald Trump has defeated Ted Cruz by 10 points, half the margin over Rubio in Florida. But the situation with regard to Illinois and Missouri is yet to be determined. We do have report that late voters, those who decided late who to vote for, were tending to go for Cruz, which can have to do with a whole lot of the propaganda that's been directed toward the Trump campaign, which I'm going to discuss. By far the most interesting situation is in Ohio, where it may be that John Kasich is going to be able to pull it out. Right now, with only 1% reporting, however, he has a lead of 44.2 to 32.3 over Donald Trump, with Cruz in third place and Marco Rubio in fourth. One factor that may have made a difference in Ohio is that the Republican Party in Ohio went ahead and endorsed Kasich for president, which normally is not something they would do during a primary, but only during a general election. So it may be that Kasich is able to hang on to Ohio. My prediction would be, however, that this one is going to go very late. And while I will be getting updates during the show, I have no doubt that it will be hours before the situation in Ohio is determined. Now, when I talk about propaganda and so forth against the Trump campaign, let me give you some illustrations and some background, which is no doubt the most important information I will convey during the program this evening. There was a photograph of a woman wearing a Trump T-shirt giving a Sieg Heil, a Nazi salute. Now, that makes it look as though the Trump campaign is loaded with neo-Nazis. That, however, does not appear to be the case for reasons I'm going to elaborate in some detail. It turns out this woman wearing the Trump T-shirt giving the Nazi salute is named Portia Borga, P-O-R-T-I-A, Borger, B-O-U-L-G-E-R, who runs the Twitter campaign of Women for Sanders. Portia Borger wearing a Trump T-shirt giving a Nazi salute and thereby seeking to convey the impression that followers of Donald Trump are neo-Nazis actually was a plant. This was a fake event, a staged event involving the woman who actually runs a Twitter campaign of Women for Sanders. Now, there's much more going on here than that. Wayne Madsen, whom I regard as our nation's leading investigative journalist, in his article, in his report for March 14 through 15, talks about the Soros-sharp methods employed by anti-Trump protesters. Let me give you the key paragraph with which he begins. The people of Eastern Europe and the Middle East are all too familiar with the street tactics being employed by anti-Donald Trump protesters across the United States. As previously seen on the streets of Europe, during highly coordinated and well-planned political demonstrations, anti-Trump protesters in Chicago, Cleveland, St. Louis, Dayton, and other cities appeared before television cameras waving freshly printed protest signs. Such rent-a-mob actions are trademarks of the involvement of George Soros and the Central Intelligence Agency's godfather of political street violence, Gene Sharp, in disrupting the normal political process. Now, what you need to understand about George Soros, who some may think is a good guy, but in fact turns out to be very bad, completely the opposite, is that he's helped to finance uprising in Eastern Europe, in the Ukraine, for example, to overthrow the democratically elected government of the Ukraine and create an aggravation of relationships with Russia. Whatever you may think, this is a bad move. It represents the neoconservative agenda, where I have mentioned before and repeat again, their key players in the Obama administration, including Samantha Power at the United Nations, Victoria Nuland in the Department of State, Ashlyn Carter at the Department of Defense, and Susan Rice as National Security Advisor, who are promoting the neocon agenda. These are people who put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. 9/11, for example, was brought to us by the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, most of whom had come from the Project for a New American Century and were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens and the Mossad. The destruction of the World Trade Center appears to have been outsourced to the Mossad. For more evidence substantiating what I'm telling you here and now, go online to the two-hour video presentation where I give you the evidence entitled The Real Deal, episode number 103, 9/11, Who Was Responsible and Why. If you only ever invested 2 hours in research on 9/11, this is the 2 hours you ought to invest. I repeat, The Real Deal, episode number 103, 9/11, Who Was Responsible and Why. where you'll have a conversation between myself and Dennis Camino, who was the top electronics troubleshooter for the Navy before he left the Navy and went to work for Raytheon. Dennis is one of the most brilliant and astute students of political intelligence issues I have ever known. And I can assure you, based upon my own research, where I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, where I've organized conferences, maintained the website, given lectures galore, been flown around the world to give keynote addresses, such as at the American Scholars Conference in Los Angeles in 2006. I was flown to Athens to appear on a 3.5-hour television program that was broadcast worldwide by satellite that December. I've been flown to Buenos Aires to be the keynote speaker at the International Symposium on 9/11 Truth and Justice held in the National Library in Argentina. They actually have some respect for scholarship and intellectuals, which you do not find in the United States, which may be the most anti-intellectual and least knowledgeable population in the world when it comes to issues like these, especially because our media has been so hopelessly and totally controlled and dominated by big corporations, which are in bed with the government. There are CIA agents at all of the major media outlets in the United States, have no doubt about it. Anderson Cooper is known for his affiliation. Wolf Blitzer is known for his affiliation. The New York Times publishes disinformation to benefit the CIA. The Washington Post publishes disinformation to benefit the CIA. If you want a recent piece of mine, in which I explain why they introduced the phrase conspiracy theorist in order to label and diminish or downplay those of us who are critics of the government, where it was introduced specifically to attempt to imply that unless critics of the government know everything there is to know about a particular case, such as the assassination of JFK, then they're not deserving to be taken seriously. Check out the YouTube, short YouTube, 17 minutes, Why I, Jim Fetzer, Am a Conspiracy Theorist, and you'll gain insights to understand the use of that phrase in relation to, well, the examples I use there are a lot of them from JFK. If you want a short take on other false flags, I returned recently from the Pacific Northwest, where I gave presentations in Seattle and in Portland. The Seattle presentation was beautifully edited by a brilliant guy, and in less than an hour, you get a bare-bones treatment about 9/11, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, San Bernardino, and even, for an international flavor, Paris. Now, this whole this thing with Soros, it goes beyond the Ukraine. George Soros is also behind the uprising in Ferguson, Missouri. He was paying people to get out on the street and demonstrate. And he's a backer of Hillary Clinton. So look at the genius of using Move On, which largely is associated with Bernie Sanders, and having their people attack those at a Trump rally. Agreed, Donald Trump has made some statements that are inflammatory, where he needs to cool his rhetoric. And I'll have an interesting comment about that momentarily. But just think of the genius. If you're opposed to outsiders taking control, then see if you can create a situation that tends to diminish both the Trump campaign on the Republican side and the Sanders campaign on the Democratic. In fact, when Trump reported that these appeared to be Sanders people because he'd been informed they were from Move On, and as I've already told you, we have this woman, Portia Bulger, who is wearing a Trump T-shirt but giving a Nazi salute, who runs the Twitter campaign of Women for Sanders. There's every reason why Donald Trump would be correct in his belief that it was Sanders people. On the other hand, Bernie Sanders, who is himself personally a good and decent man, would never think of doing such a thing, and he therefore went about attacking Trump as a liar. I mean, it was really stunning because Trump wasn't lying when he was reporting his sincere belief that MoveOn, Sanders people, had been involved in disrupting the Trump campaign in Chicago, which he, of course, had to cancel. So you got a very clever move by George Soros and this fellow Gene Sharp, using techniques that have been used in Europe again and again and again, street demonstrations to create chaos with regard to democratic procedures. And in this case, George Soros and Gene Sharp have been particularly astute in using MoveOn members to confront Trump members when the two of them represent criticism of the outside, criticism of NAFTA, criticism of these international trade agreements, criticism of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Those are the programs that George Soros wants to have adopted. They are programs that Hillary Clinton is going to support, and although she has in the past, NAFTA was brought to us by Bill Clinton, her husband, but in the past she has supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now she says she's opposed to it, but nobody believes her. In the ranking of trustworthy and honest, Hillary gets like a negative 67%. So there are very good reasons why people don't believe Hillary when she says now she's opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which, by the way, would create an international panel of corporate attorneys that could overwrite the statutes and laws of any of the nations covered, including 14, including the United States, and even our Constitution. Yes, that's right. What that means is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, if it were passed, would abrogate the sovereignty of the United States. It would place our laws and our Constitution under the control of a board of international lawyers. I believe this is why Barack Obama sent a trade representative down to New Zealand to sign it with no fanfare. And I also believe it's a principle, perhaps the primary reason he's been going about this aggressive gun control agenda, which has no foundation in fact. Not only are the events that he's using to justify gun control, such as Sandy Hook and San Bernardino and the Umpqua shooting and even Charleston, fabricated or staged or orchestrated events, but the fact is it takes 20 minutes for the police to show up when they receive an emergency call. If you can't defend yourself, since the mayhem takes place in the first 5 minutes, your daughter may already have been raped, your wife may have been mugged, you may have been killed while waiting for the police to show up. When I published the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which had 13 contributors, including 6 PhD, current or retired college professors, which Amazon would ban in less than a month, no doubt because it blows apart the official story of Sandy Hook, demonstrating multiple ways that the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students there for anyone, including Adam Lanza, to have shot, and that it was done to promote gun control. I included as one appendix the FEMA manual for the two-day event where there was a rehearsal on the 13th, going live on the 14th. In fact, there was so much confusion at the time that many of the participants put up donation websites already on the 13th, the day before the event would go live. And even Adam Lanza, the alleged shooter's date of death, was recorded in the Social Security death index as having occurred on the 13th, making his event in shooting 20 children and 6 adults the following day all the more remarkable. This is the kind of rubbish that Barack Obama is using to try to convince us to give up our guns. And anyone who doesn't recognize the seriousness of his intent already on January 16, 2013, this is 1 month and 2 days after the alleged shooting at Sandy Hook, he signed no less than 23 executive orders to subvert our right to own and possess weapons under the Second Amendment. Since he took an oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, from all enemies, foreign and domestic, which includes the Bill of Rights. He has been violating his oath of office. He is a disgrace. He's doing it deliberately. They're manufacturing these fake attacks. Indeed, after Santa Barbara, after the San Bernardino attack, where we have even discovered the Craigslist ad for extras with a call date of the first, report on the second, good pay, transportation, food, some speaking roles, the White House announced that these terrorist attacks will end when these gun control laws are passed. Kurt Russell, the actor, was so enraged. He said, this is idiotic. Anyone who believes that terrorist attacks will stop when gun control laws are passed is wrong. I think what they were trying to tell us is, I have heard of the organization Terrorists for Gun Control. Since they are staging these events, these are phony attacks in order to promote gun control. Once the gun control legislation is passed, it will no longer be necessary to stage anymore, and therefore they will cease. That's the blatancy with which the White House is transmitting to its position. Regarding comparisons of Donald Trump to Hitler, the cartoonist who writes Dilbert has done a very nice job in a recent blog discussing it, the comparison with Hitler. Is it justified, he asks. According to social media and the mainstream media as well, Trump might be the next Hitler because he does things Hitler would have done. For example, Trump is charismatic and appeals to our prejudices, as does Hitler. Trump approves of violence against people he thinks deserve it, as did Hitler. Trump blames others for the nation's problems, as did Hitler. Trump has an authoritarian vibe, as does Hitler. But while all of that is true, there are very important differences, make this a faulty analogy, ways in which Trump is definitely not like Hitler. Consider, Trump is anti-war. Hitler, however, went against conducting some of the most aggressive wars in recent history, including, for example, Trump's forthright condemnation of our involvement in the war and terror in the Middle East, the invasion of Iraq, the wasting of fortified trillion. How much better had we kept that money at home? Trump asks us to favor legal citizens over non-citizens. He makes no mention of race because he mostly cared about race. Where if I believe that if Trump had simply defined it in terms of region rather than religion, those in middle would have noted a temporary ban. And given how much Muslims have been demonized in the United States, it's not surprising that the people would be supporting of this till we figure out what's going on. Trump wants citizens to be heavily armed to protect themselves against bad people, including dictators. Hitler didn't want to arm his potential enemies, but wanted to disarm them. Trump wants greater freedom of speech that would include politically incorrect topics. Hitler wasn't so big on free speech for others. And notice how much effort is being made by the establishment to constrain Trump from talking about issues they don't want him to talk about. Trump assures us his genitalia have no problem. Hitler, and this is a curiosity which is mentioned here, had just one testicle. I could go on. Again, this is the cartoonist who does Dilbert, but you see how easy this is. The mainstream media can either portray Trump as Hitler or as non-Hitler. So far, they've chosen subconsciously, presumably, the Hitler analogy all the way. Well, scientific reasoning must be based upon all the available evidence. When you take into account all the issues, all the similarities and differences, it's obvious there are more differences than similarities, and that the analogy with Hitler is a faulty analogy, but one the establishment which wants to defeat Trump is promoting. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. Stand by. I'll be right back.
Thank you. Why do people order Life Change Tea? Because Life Change Tea helps the digestive system. Life Change Tea helps the colon unclog. The tea also helps with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and many, many other health issues. Life Change Tea also tastes great. And Life Change Tea is not just green tea. Life Change Tea is a unique blend of 8 different herbs that go to town, cleaning your body of harmful toxins, bacteria, and parasites. Our tea is number one. Are you ready for your life change? Let the tea help you. Log on to our online store of helpful products to get your body on track. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or you can call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. Not all tea is equal. Read our website of all the factual testimonies that prove that Life Change Tea is working. Health is important, and our quality of life is very important. Don't wait to order. Expect a life change with Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the 4 most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio Superfood. I've taken Bio Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
There are 3 factors that determine the rate at which your body will repair itself. 1 is the amount of growth factors in your system. 2 is the amount and quality of complete proteins in your diet. And 3 is the health of your liver. After age 28, your ability to repair declines by 10% each passing decade. So by age 40, it has declined by 12%. By age 50, 22%. And by age 70, it has declined 42%. Advances in nutritional science enable you to overcome this rate of deterioration. Synergy One is a powerful product that activates your body's ability to repair. Within 1 month of usage, 96% of people report that they sleep better, have more energy, a better mood, need less food, and feel stronger. Many people have reported back, joint, and muscle pain going away. Women have reported hot flashes going away, and both genders have reported losses of body fat and a return of their sex drives. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit SGN80.com. That's SGN80.com.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. Further reporting is coming in Illinois. Donald Trump is beating Ted Cruz by 44.2% to 22.4%. That doesn't leave a lot of room for doubt, although that's with a small percentage reporting. Typically, those are representative districts. Anyway, it looks very positive for Trump in Illinois. And in Missouri, Donald Trump is leading Ted Cruz by 48.6 to 32.3. So it looks as though Trump is going to take 4 out of 5 of the states up for grabs tonight. The interesting case where he may or may not prevail is Ohio, which would leave Kasich somewhere in the race, but in my opinion, nowhere obvious to go. I mean, you know, it may have been an unusual set of circumstances that has given him what now is a 44.0 to 32.5 lead over Trump. But where Hillary, by the way, seems to be mopping up Bernie elsewhere. And a very serious question I want to discuss with you is what happens when Hillary takes Bernie Sanders out of the race. Bernie Sanders, remember, stands for Oppositions to NAFTA and the TPP. He's for Medicare for all. He's opposed to wealth inequality. He's a 74-year-old socialist who believes in the socialistic programs that the American people have most benefited from in our nation's history, such as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment insurance, workman's compensation. Are those followers more likely to gravitate to Hillary, who has supported NAFTA in the past and who cannot be trusted when she says she opposes the TPP, who's suffering from major scandals involving emails? Some of the writing about this, these emails is simply horrendous because they were so highly classified. There's some experts in this area who say they cannot imagine how it would be possible that she not be prosecuted, how she was eager in precipitated the attack by NATO on Libya, where the Libyan people were living an idyllic life under Muammar Gaddafi. He was a dictator, yes, but he was a benevolent dictator. He was sharing the wealth of Libya with the Libyan people. There was national health care. There was a national public education. He was giving $45,000 gifts to newly married couples. He was undertaking the Great Waterworks Project that would have turned North Africa into a veritable oasis. He was introducing the gold dinar, which would have become the currency of all of Africa. He had abandoned the petrodollar, just as Saddam Hussein had abandoned the petrodollar, just as Iran had abandoned the petrodollar. And if you want a recipe to understand when your nation might come into the sights, the military sights of the United States, abandoning the petrodollar is virtually guaranteed to bring that about. So he also, of course, she also facilitated her husband Bill in his abuse of women. It's truly shocking. But Bill was even kicked out of Oxford for having raped a fellow student. Hillary opposed all the women who sought to expose this and wanted to pursue it. There's a book by Roger Stone entitled The Clinton's War on Women. What I'm telling you is that Hillary Clinton is not a person of high ethics. One of the reasons for admiring Bernie Sanders is because he is a person of high ethics. Now, Trump, of course, has been attacking NAFTA and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He's been attacking ISIS. He did promote the temporary ban on Muslims. He has spoken of a wall on Mexico, where, by the way, there already is a wall between the United States and Mexico. It's just a rather flimsy wall. So the idea that that's outrageous won't cut it if you understand the facts of the matter. And, of course, in relation to the Middle East, I emphasize again, he has condemned our involvement there. I was very proud of Sean Hannity, where I go back and forth between Fox and MSNBC and CNN to get different points of view on these issues. When Sean Hannity stood up for Donald Trump, when he was being attacked as a fascist, as a neo-Hitler, I've already explained to you why that's a flawed analogy and won't cut it when you take into account all the relevant factors or points of comparison, by pointing out that Trump is a nationalist. He wants to put America first, that he's a populist, that he wants to improve the life of the average working person, and that he's a non-interventionist. I believe he, like Rand Paul, is opposed to the use of American military force unless it's absolutely necessary. He does not believe in regime change. He does not believe in nation building. He appears opposed to the program to take out the governments of seven countries in the next 5 years. That was the result of 9/11, which Wesley Clark shared with us, namely the program to take out the governments of seven countries, beginning with Iran and Iraq and Libya, ending with Syria and Iran. The Russians have put an end to the Syrian intervention, though it's fascinating to me that Vladimir Putin has now withdrawn. Most of the Russian military forces are announced he's about to do so, because Russia, unlike the United States, was mopping up ISIS. Between February 1st and February 4th, for example, Putin launched 900 attacks on ISIS. We know that Obama's been protective of ISIS. He requires pamphlets to be dropped, strafing runs to be conducted before those oil tankers are attacked. I think it's consciousness of guilt, because he understands we created ISIS to put pressure on the Assad regime, that where the Judicial Watch, under a Freedom of Information Act request, was able to obtain the documents from the Defense Intelligence Agency that created ISIS. We have photographs of ISIS members sporting U.S. Army tattoos. We have a video hacked from the files of an aide to Senator John McCain, where ISIS is known in Washington, D.C. as John McCain's army, showing those fake beheading videos being filmed on a soundstage in Tel Aviv or even Hollywood. We know the Iraqi army shot down two U.K. cargo planes providing supplies to ISIS. A week later, Iraqi popular forces shot down an American helicopter doing the same. And we know that Israel is treating injured and wounded ISIS members. The government has been lying to us again and again, not just domestically about Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing in San Bernardino, but internationally about ISIS in Syria and a whole host of other issues. The question I'm raising here is the following. Now that it's becoming clear that Hillary is going to prevail, that Sanders is not going to be the Democratic nominee, are Sanders supporters going to be more inclined to support Hillary Clinton, which it seems to me is an abdication of all of Bernie's efforts to expose the gutting of the manufacturing and industrial base of the United States by NAFTA, or are they more likely to go for Donald Trump? I think this is the single most important question that now arises about the future of these campaigns. I will have an additional note to make, which is this, and then I'll take we have a call from Alan. There were two reports here that didn't get much news. One is that Mitch McConnell had called Donald Trump to suggest that he needs to tone it down regarding, you know, hitting people in the face or whatever. Tone it down. The other is that Paul Ryan came out just today and said about the violence at these rallies that it was being precipitated by the left wing, by liberals who are trying to break up these rallies that were being held on behalf of Republican candidates. Now, agree with that or disagree, and I've given you reason to believe that actually George Soros and Gene Sharp are behind this, so that using techniques that have been employed again and again in Europe to benefit Hillary by pitting the Sanders forces against the Trump forces. I mean, what a stroke of genius. If you want to discredit candidates that are opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the North American Free Trade Agreement, what better way to do it? What I see here, and the reason I'm mentioning this now, is because this is suggestive to me that the Republican leadership has assessed the situation. Trump has so much support, they realize that even if he doesn't have the total number of candidates to qualify for the nomination before the convention, that denying him the nomination at the convention would split the party irretrievable and hand the election to Hillary Clinton. I believe, therefore, that these are early signs that the GOP's establishment is reconciling itself to the prospect that Donald Trump will be their candidate and wanting to benefit from the millions of new voters he's bringing in. He's bringing in those so-called Reagan Democrats. He's bringing in blue-collar workers, many of whom had never voted Republican before in their lives. I believe we're seeing signs, subtle signs, that is what is taking place here. And I do not believe that John Kasich being able to pull out Ohio, as it appears he is doing tonight, is going to disrupt what I would predict will be the ultimate outcome, which would be pitting a Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton. Now we have a caller here from Alan. Alan, are you there? Alan, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Yes, speak, Alan. You're on.
All right. Okay. I would like to call your attention to a website. Now, all of that we've heard about Hitler has been the propagandists against him. This website shows National Socialist Germany in a different light. Now, it's over 2 hours long, but it's broken up into 15-minute segments, so you don't have to watch it all at once. And the website is www.thegreateststorynevertold.tv. And this gives a whole new light, to me anyway, about all of the propaganda that's been falsely attributed to Adolf Hitler.
Well, I think that's very good that you bring it up, because we have to look at all sides of the issues when there's relevant evidence we may have never considered. It's terribly important to avail yourself of that new evidence to reassess your hypothesis, where the availability of new evidence may require us to reject hypotheses we previously accepted, to accept hypotheses we previously rejected, and to leave others in suspense. It's fascinating.
That's right.
Yeah, it's very good you raised this, Alan, so that everyone should know about it. What you're talking about appears to be a two-hour video YouTube presentation, The Greatest Story Never Told. And while I haven't watched it myself, I'm glad you bring it up. I'll try to find
it. Yes, it'll be the most informative 2.5 hours you ever spent. I guarantee it.
Well, I can well believe it. Now, in one of my recent books, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, I had four chapters there addressing the moon landing hoax, four chapters addressing the death and replacement of Paul McCartney, which is significant because if you can replace the most closely scrutinized man in the world, and the public by and large not catch on, you can replace anyone. And therefore, I have two more chapters about the first death of Saddam Hussein, who was actually taken out just 3 weeks into the invasion of Iraq by a B-1 bomber pilot, whose mother contacted me to explain to me what happened. I asked, could she prove it? And she started sending me one article, proof after another, including even Vice President Dick Cheney being quoted as saying in the New York Times, now I think we got Saddam, that his lifeless body was dragged out of the rubble, which was from a restaurant on the outskirts of Baghdad, where her son, Captain Chris Wachter, had piloted his B-1 bomber and dropped four JDAM bombs on a restaurant, taking out Saddam, his two sons, and 50 or 60 members of the general staff. W was going to announce this aboard the USS Lincoln during the mission accomplished ceremony, but someone, and we believe it was Donald Rumsfeld, realized that three presidents had signed executive orders against the assassination of a foreign leader, which meant that if Bush were to announce we got Saddam, he would be admitting he'd broken the law, and therefore they had to curtail it and made it such a bizarre event that seemed to lack the punch, precisely because they had to hold it back. They flew Captain Walker back to Langley after he was feted at the Crystal Cathedral by the Reverend Robert Schiller for having taken out Saddam Hussein, told that while they admired his flying skills and officially Saddam had got away, they put one of his doubles in a spider hole, claimed to have captured him, then put him on trial and hung him, but it was all an elaborate ruse. Just as the second death of Osama bin Laden, about which there are two more chapters, was contrived in order for political benefit for Barack Obama, Osama actually died on December 15, 2001. He was buried in Afghanistan in an unmarked grave. In accordance with Muslim tradition, there were local obituaries about it. David Ray Griffin has published a book about it, Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive. Kurt Kullerstrom, historian of science in the UK, the leading expert in the world on the London 7-7 subway attacks, has published an article about it, Osama bin Laden, 1957 to 2001. When Obama undertook the raid on the compound in Pakistan, I found it so outrageous that I published an article about it exposing the entire hoax entitled Zero Dark 30, The Deeper, Darker Truths, where even the photograph in the White House where Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and Joe Biden were watching what appeared to be a large screen TV as events went down live, but their cover was blown by Leon Panetta, who was a director of the CIA, who observed there had been no coverage, no live coverage for the first 20 or 25 minutes, which was the entire duration of the event, just one of many scams to which the American people have been subjected, and then four chapters about the Holocaust. I began looking into this and was rather dumbfounded to discover that there were 236 references to 6 million Jews in dire straits or fear of loss of their lives in the international press beginning already in 1890, long before the Nuremberg tribunals. That the figure 6 million appears to be derivative from a religious source, a disputed passage in Leviticus that maintains that the chosen people can return to the promised land only when there are minus 6 million who have been consumed in the flames. But where even that required an interpolation, since there's no word or symbol in the Hebrew for 6 million, and where the International Committee of the Red Cross revised its estimates for how many had died in all of the death camps combined, where they were conducting regular visits and recording the name and the race and the religion of all of those who died, including their causes. And in 1993, revised their estimate to 297,081, far removed from 6 million, none of whom died from being put to death in gas chambers using Zyklon B. Indeed, there's no evidence that Hitler was seeking to exterminate the Jews, it turns out. The fact that many were in a state of advanced starvation at the end of the war was a consequence of the Allied bombing of German cities, which was massive and thorough and devastating and interdicted the railroad lines that were being used to resupply the camps, so that it was impossible for them to be fed. The consequence, of course, being the obvious, they were using Zyklon B to defeat the spread of disease, typhus, and dysentery among the inmates, in other words, to promote their health. These were labor camps. They were not death camps. You can't get any work out of a corpse. And it turns out when Zyklon B is used in a chamber, its causal interaction with the walls turns them blue. Bodies that die from cyanide, of which Zyklon B is a form, turn pink, but we have no reports of pink bodies, and the only walls that turned blue were from the chambers used. In fact, Fred Lauscher, who was an expert on gas chambers, gave a report years and years ago, explained how it would have been impossible for any of the facilities that were alleged to be present at these camps, like Auschwitz and Buchenwald and so forth, to have served as gas chambers, that they were completely inadequate for the purpose. The whole story appears to have been to divert Allied responsibility for the death of so many in those camps. So I add this because, in addition to what you're suggesting about the role of Hitler in World War II as potentially being enormously different than we have been told, already in my book, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, you can find four chapters, three of whom are by world-class experts on the Holocaust, and where one of them by Robert Forrason is entitled Hollywoodism Against Hollywoodism and Revisionism, where he explains the key points I've explained here about the Allied bombing causing the destruction not only of the German cities, which, by the way, it was a war crime, a form of collective punishment that's condemned by Article 33 of the Geneva Conventions of 1949. So you could argue, well, maybe it wasn't a war crime before those Geneva Conventions were passed, but it turns out that the sanctions we've imposed on Iraq, which led to the death of 500,000 Iraqi infants, and more recently on Iran, are clearly forms of collective punishment where Article 33 specifically states no individual may be punished for a crime they did not personally commit. This is one of the issues on which Donald Trump is clearly wrong, doesn't have his facts right, because our own intelligence agencies, all 16, had concluded already in 2007 that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011, where even the Mossad concluded by 2012 that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons. So negotiating the agreement with Iran was a good thing. Some of you may have heard my observation that Iran is one of the great peace-loving countries of the world. Iran has not attacked any other nation since 1775. Our Constitution only began its ratification in 1787. George Washington was only elected president in 1789. So for longer than the United States has existed as a constitutional republic, Iran has not attacked any other nation. Iran did defend itself against the massive onslaught and attack by Iraq that was precipitated and encouraged by the United States, which brought about a million deaths on both sides, a million Iraqis and a million Iranians. But the fact is the $150 billion that Donald seems to believe is taxpayer money actually was Iran's own money that had been frozen. Iran recently tested ballistic missiles, but it's perfectly entitled to do that. Any country has the right to defend itself as a sovereign nation against threats for other nations. So I'm hopeful and optimistic that the Donald will get the excellent advisors. He's done this in the past. He's shown himself to have a flexibility of mind. He's already asserted that he's not going to compromise on entitlements like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. I believe his plan to have a more competition among different insurance companies by having individual insurance accounts is misconceived. I would like to believe he's going to adopt Bernie's proposal of Medicare for all, because Medicare was designed to be gradually expanded to cover every member of the population. So I'm hopeful that the Donald will get expert advice, broaden his horizons, and do much more for the American people. But I have no doubt he's overwhelmingly better for this nation and for benefiting all of us as a man who's a nationalist and a populist and a non-intervention than any alternative candidate, including especially Hillary Clinton, whose whole history is precisely the opposite. So, Alan, I'm very pleased you call in. I'm glad to supplement what you had to say. I encourage us all to check it out, The Greatest Story Never Told, 2 hours on YouTube, and see what we think, because it may
be... Yeah, that's .tv.
Right. On TV, but it's also on YouTube, Al, and that's where most people will find it.
I don't believe so. I think it was taken off.
No, it'll be there, Alan. I'm very confident. Anyway, we'll look for it. Alan, I want to thank you for calling in, and I just want to conclude by saying the situation politically and otherwise, historically, in terms of what we've been told, is not at all the way they would have us believe. Remember the adage, history is a pack of lies that the living play upon the dead. Well, we're discovering that for ourselves every single day.
What is Napoleon said? That history was fables written by the winners.
That's right. The winners play upon the losers. Alan, I want to thank you for calling in. And I want to thank everyone for being here for the raw deal today. The latest numbers I have now for Ohio show John Kasich having won with 43.3%, Donald Trump 34.4%. So we have a most interesting series of events ahead of us. Thank you all for listening. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal.
I am officially running for President of the United States, and we are going to make our country great again. Time magazine last week did an incredible cover story. They said it's a movement, and that's what it is. It's an incredible movement with incredible people. Incredible people.
I continue to believe Mr. Trump will not be president.
They are going to people showing videos of Donald Trump.
It interferes with reason.
Unhinged mobs assaulted people, attacked police, tore up signs, blocked ambulances, fired guns in the air, and threatened to rape women.
The liberal media and Ted Cruz and Brent's boy Marco Rubio are all blaming Donald Trump.
Frankly, Donald has created a very toxic environment, and it's really in dividing people.
And liberals are always first in line to try to restrict the First Amendment rights of others. And I want to say a word about these other spineless GOP candidates. You know, instead of exploiting this situation to try to prop up their failing campaigns, what they ought to be doing is standing up and saying, you know, we may not agree with everything Trump says, we may not even like the way he says it, but we are standing in solidarity with his First Amendment rights. They won't do that because they're too weak to do that, which is why they're losing.
Less than 3% of you people read books, because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets, turn them off now, turn them off and leave them off.
Now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so they'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. The number to call in after the break is 717-300-1698, 717-300-1698. We're in the midst of what may be the most fascinating and tumultuous presidential campaign in history, although if you go back far enough, you find that many presidential campaigns in the United States have been rather brutal, where language far more coarse than any we have heard today have been exchanged, insults, fights, fisticuffs, the whole bit. Lots of things have happened in American political history. I think Trump's use of language has come across as being more striking because we've been living in an era of political correctness in which we're supposed to speak very nicely and politely about everyone, whether we agree with them or disagree with them, and Donald has been shattering the mold. This is only one of many reasons why he's making a tremendous mark, great impact, winning four, even five, if you count the islands, of the last six elections here, and by impressive margins. Florida, of course, was particularly significant since it marked the end of Marco Rubio's campaign for the presidency, notwithstanding the prospect that the Republicans might try to revive him at a convention if Donald doesn't have the necessary number. 1237 is what sticks in my mind before the convention begins, because if there's anything that unifies the Republicans today, the Republican establishment, if in the past it was anyone but Hillary, today it's anyone but Trump, and it appears that would even include Hillary. In my opinion, what Trump has done is to reveal the core corruption of both parties, that they're both cozy with the present situation, with relations between big corporations, the Congress, the military, industrial complex, and all that, even with a Zionist agenda, which we have been pursuing since 9/11, which was actually brought to us, compliments of Bibi Netanyahu, who used his fertile imagination to figure out how he could get the United States to use its military might to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the Middle East. And while this may not sound as though it's a front and center issue, I believe that it's increasingly important given that on the one hand, Donald Trump has repudiated the wars in the Middle East. He's condemned the invasion of Iraq. He's explained why we would have been far better off as a nation if we'd taken that $4 or $5 trillion and invested it in roads and bridges and schools here at home, that we've done nothing that has benefited the United States but left the Middle East in chaos. He's talked about how the nations would have been better off if Gaddafi were still in Libya and if Saddam Hussein were still in Iraq. And on these points, he is making impeccable truth. This is absolutely 100% the case. And it was because of the manipulation of the American government, especially through the neocons, originally in the Project for a New American Century, most of whom were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, but who were moved into the Department of Defense after Bush and Cheney manipulated their victory in Florida, which, had the vote been legitimate, would have gone to Al Gore, who would have never embroiled us in the orchestrated events of 9/11. Now, this is important for several reasons, including that Hillary, at heart, is a neocon. She was the instrumentality that made the attack on Libya happen. It was a complete and utter disgrace. I have featured a couple, Jimmy and Joanne Moriarty, who were in Libya at the time. The Libyan society was actually quite idyllic, because while Muammar Gaddafi was a dictator, he was a benevolent dictator. He was sharing all of the wealth of Libya with the Libyan people. He was giving newly married couples $45,000 cash presents. There was national health care, national public education. There was a warehouse. If anyone was in need, they could go to the warehouse and get all the food they required to eat. They would fly Libyans who had medical problems that couldn't be addressed in the nation anywhere in the world in the company of a friend or relative, all expense paid to have it cared for. Crime was virtually zero. Gaddafi was also undertaking the Great Waterworks Project that would have turned North Africa into a veritable oasis. And what may have ultimately been his downfall, he was introducing the gold dinar, a currency of actual value that would have rapidly become the common coin of all of Africa. Now, Hillary, who appears to me in this respect to have been an instrumentality of the Rothschild banking empire, where the Clintons seemed very, very concerned with getting cash to pocket their foundation, where there's a whole history here of nations having made contributions to the foundation and then received military benefits from the United States, was the principal sponsor of the attack on Libya. Robert Gates, who was a very reasonable Secretary of Defense, far more objective and even-handed than our present occupant, Ash Carter, and more so than many others, and even Barack Obama, were not enthusiastic about attacking Libya. But Hillary made it happen. And we had wave after wave of NATO forces, you know, bombing Libya, where there was virtually no crime whatsoever, where the people were living in peace. They sent in mercenary armies. They were paid three times, first to kill people, then again to cut them up, then again to burn their bodies. The story is absolutely horrific. Rape became an absolute prevalent activity by these invading forces, raping Libyan women, wholesale slaughter, destruction of the culture, where today, if she wants to call it a success, Libya is in chaos. It's widely regarded as one of the great breeding grounds for terrorism in the Middle East. And for that, we can thank Hillary Clinton. In addition, on the other side, Michael Savage has exposed that Ted Cruz turns out to be a puppet of the Bush family, that he has long roots with the Bush family, and now that Jeb is out, the Bushes are supporting Ted Cruz. And a further expose has come with regard to his Foreign Affairs Advisory Council, which include well-known members of the neocon community that brought us 9/11, that supported the attack on Libya, that wants the United States to continue fighting these wars in the Middle East, where it's overwhelmingly probable, therefore, that if Ted Cruz were to become the president of the United States, then the influence presently being exerted by key neocons in positions such as the Samantha Power, Ambassador to the United Nations, Victoria Nuland, Assistant Secretary of State, Ashlyn Carter at the Department of Defense, and Susan Rice as the President's National Security Advisor would continue. And you could even view that as part and parcel of Hillary's desire to extend the Obama administration. Well, to the extent to which you're opposed to those wars in the Middle East, which I believe also includes Bernie Sanders, obviously Rand Paul and others, it seems to me Donald Trump properly qualifies as a non-interventionist, meaning it's not that he wouldn't be willing to use military force, but he sees many instances in which military force has been wielded improperly and wrongly, which means anyone who thinks that Donald Trump is supported by Zionist forces just doesn't understand the score. The Zionists were behind 9/11. The Zionists are behind the series taking out a series of seven nations in the next 5 years, which Wesley Clark shared with us at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, namely beginning with Iraq and Libya, ending with Syria and Iran. And while the Donald is wrong about Iran, because we know from our own intel agencies, all 16 agreed in 2007 that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011, where even the Mossad concluded that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons in 2012, just 3 weeks before Bibi went to the UN to declare precisely the opposite. The Zionists, mark my words, are opposed to Donald Trump. They are going to fall behind Ted Cruz or even Hillary Clinton, because both of them can be counted on to support the neocon agenda. Shocking, but true. And while women, we discover in a new poll, seem to be taking a very dim view of Donald Trump, and where we have attack ads using words that Donald has used over a long period of time in various different contexts to describe women in unflattering ways, seem to be about 50% overtly hostile to him, it's not clear to me that they're going to feel the same way about Hillary as they might now once they learn the truth. For example, not only was Libya a gross massacre of a idyllic culture the responsibility of Hillary Clinton, but she has gone to bat for her bill fighting the women that he has been exploiting sexually. Where Bill Clinton, bear in mind, was even kicked out of Oxford for raping a fellow student. Roger Stone has a brilliant book about which I have interviewed him entitled The Clinton's War on Women. And it sounds odd because you think Hillary's a great champion of women's right, reproductive choice, and all that. But the fact of the matter is she has taken a very abusive attitude toward women that Bill has exploited in order to undermine their ability to bring charges against him or even get their complaints heard in public. Hillary is a nasty piece of work. She is not sticking up for women when it comes to real women who have had real sexual dealings with Bill Clinton, and there turn out to be quite a few. So it seems to me this is a whole war that's yet to be waged politically by the ads about Hillary. It seems to me right now, yes, because Donald is so open and violative of political correctness that a lot of women are opposed to him, that they may take a more forgiving attitude and certainly be less charitable toward Hillary as the truth begins to come out, because it is out there, and I can guarantee you that when it gets down to Trump versus Clinton, that the Donald is going to be able to do a great deal to weaken enthusiasm for Hillary. In fact, one of the striking features of these Democratic primaries is that while Bernie Sanders has been burning up the turf and getting lots of young people and new voters to support him, the same has not been true of Hillary. And the turnouts for Democratic primaries and caucuses in general has been lower than in past years, including when Barack Obama was running against Hillary, while on the other hand, the Republican turnout has been astronomical. Donald Trump is bringing new people in, bringing crossovers, independents support him, Democrats support him. He's rebuilding what used to be regarded as the Reagan coalition, which included blue-collar Democrats who were very enthusiastic about Ronald Reagan, and now are equally enthusiastic about Donald Trump, and which it pivots about the crucial issue of trade agreements. The fact is that Sanders' victory in Michigan was a function of workers there recognizing the poverty and despair that had befallen the American labor since NAFTA, where you recall Ross Perot warned us that giant sucking sound was jobs moving south. Bill Clinton brought us NAFTA. Bill Clinton brought us the World Trade Organization. These are vestiges, aspects, the vanguard of the New World Order, where corporations run the world, where national sovereignty becomes a relic of the past. And indeed, it is an aspect of the Trans-Pacific Partnership that it creates an international board of super lawyers who are able to make decisions that override the statutes and laws of any nation. There are 14 involved here, including the United States, where they even have the right to override the Constitution of the United States. And this, I believe, is tied into Obama's desire to disarm the American people, where he's gone about it very aggressively, and where, from what I can tell, even his new appointment, his nominee to the Supreme Court, who seems to be admirable in many respects, seems to be weak on the Second Amendment, where Anton Scalia was an absolute rock-hard supporter of the Second Amendment, which I personally regard in this day and age as being especially important. It's striking to me that while we had, before Scalia's death, 6 Catholics and 3 Jews on the court. Now, if this nominee were to become a member, we'd have only 5 Catholics and 4 Jews. Where's the role for Protestants, for God's sake? Is there no member of any other religious group in the United States that isn't qualified for the Supreme Court? I find it completely outrageous that Catholics and Jews should dominate the Supreme Court. And that's independent of their qualifications. The point is, it's unrepresentative of the United States regarding the religions that are of great importance here, where Protestantism may very well have a larger number of members, Protestant denominations, than are Catholic, and overwhelmingly more than are Jews. So why should we have a Supreme Court that's made up of 5 Catholics and 4 Jews? To me, it makes no sense at all. I do believe that this guy is intended to be a nominee that's going to embarrass the Republicans because he's so conservative. Many have observed he's by far the most conservative you'd ever expect from a Democratic president. So that there's discussion that if Hillary should win the election, that in the lame duck period between the election and she and her office, that the Republicans would rush to confirm this nominee because he's better by far than they would expect from a Hillary Clinton. But the point I'm coming to is this. Hillary has now claimed she's opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But the fact is, she has a very high untrustworthy record. No one thinks she's honest. And there's a tremendous record that supports that. So that, you know, the fact that she is speaking now in opposition to the TPP does not mean that once she became in office, she would oppose the TPP. In fact, I would confidently predict precisely the opposite, that if Hillary were elected, that she would embrace the TPP, move it forward, part of our Obama legacy. She'd go forward with a gun control agenda. She'd extend many of the other features that are so unfortunate as an aspect of the Obama legacy, which she would hail and extend. So I think that's a serious problem, particularly because the public, the American people, are becoming increasingly wary of these trade programs, which was the principal motivation behind the Bernie Sanders campaign. So the question becomes, what do Bernie's people do? They have been opposed to NAFTA and the TPP, which puts them in concert with Donald Trump. Hillary stood with Bill on NAFTA, and I guarantee she's going to support the TPP. Bernie also, of course, is for Medicare for All, which is completely right. The program was designed to be extended to all. Donald has talked about having individual insurance accounts, but frankly, I believe that once he came into office, he'd recognize, based upon a cost-benefit analysis, that a single-payer Medicare for All program is by far that which would most benefit the working people. And bear in mind, Donald Trump is a bona fide populist. Hillary may pretend to be one, but Hillary is an elitist. Ted Cruz is an elite of the elite group. So, you know, you can really figure that if the establishment is going to fall in behind Ted Cruz, that's simply other elitists joining behind an elitist they don't particularly care for personally, but who nevertheless is going to stand up for the establishment, which is why you've had the absurdity of Lindsey Graham a week or so ago observing that if anyone were to kill Ted Cruz on the floor of the Senate and the trial were held in the Senate, he would be acquitted. He would not be convicted, even if it happened in front of them all, to now saying that Ted Cruz is the true conservative we must rally around. We're also hearing that from Marco Rubio. But you can be assured that Marco Rubio harbors in his heart of hearts that we're going to have a broken convention and that his candidacy will somehow be resurrected. That's also true of Jeb Bush. Believe it or not, it's also true of Mitt Romney. Paul Ryan, however, seems to have opted out. Mitt Romney came into this and said, yes, he'd help to carry the heavy water against Donald Trump, but with a proviso that if they needed a new candidate, that he would be their choice. So Mitt Romney, as has been true of him forever, is in it for Mitt Romney. There's nothing altruistic about Mitt Romney. He's a vulture capitalist. He's a guy who's made money by hostile takeovers of successful companies and then selling them off for parts and pocketing his profits in the Cayman Islands. This is a disgusting guy. And bear in mind, there shouldn't be a natural sense of fervor for Mitt Romney because Obamacare was modeled on Romney care. The trouble with Obamacare is that the insurance companies were given too big a hand in writing it and derived too many benefits. And while there are valuable provisions, such as you can't be excluded if you have a pre-existing condition and increased portability from one job to another, it's by far too expensive. It can be done far more cheaply. Bernie Sanders has paved the way there. Bernie, of course, is also opposed to gross wealth inequality, which actually, ironically, is also true of Donald Trump. He wants to benefit the American people, the working people. He wants to make America great again. Think about it. Where do Bernie's people go? Do they side with the elitist Hillary Clinton, or do they come to the real populace who's opposed to the establishment Donald Trump? This is Jim Fetzer on The Raw Deal. We'll be right back.
Why do people order Life Change Tea? Because Life Change Tea helps the digestive system. Life Change Tea helps the colon unclog. The tea also helps with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and many, many other health issues. Life Change Tea also tastes great. And Life Change Tea is not just green tea. Life Change Tea is a unique blend of 8 different herbs that go to town, cleaning your body of harmful toxins, bacteria, and parasites. Our tea is number one. Are you ready for your life change? Let the tea help you. Log on to our online store of helpful products to get your body on track. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or you can call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. Not all tea is equal. Read our website of all the factual testimonies that prove that Life Change Tea is working. Health is important, and our quality of life is very important. Don't wait to order. Expect a life change with Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as bio-superfood. I've taken bio-superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
There are three factors that determine the rate at which your body will repair itself. One is the amount of growth factors in your system. Two is the amount and quality of complete proteins in your diet. And three is the health of your liver. After age 28, your ability to repair declines by 10% each passing decade. So by age 40, it has declined by 12%. By age 50, 22%. And by age 70, it has declined 42%. Advances in nutritional science enable you to overcome this rate of deterioration. Synergy One is a powerful product that activates your body's ability to repair. Within 1 month of usage, 96% of people report that they sleep better, have more energy, a better mood, need less food, and feel stronger. Many people have reported back, joint, and muscle pain going away. Women have reported hot flashes going away, and both genders have reported losses of body fat and a return of their sex drives. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit SGN80.com. That's SGN80.com.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I repeat the number, should anyone want to call in, 717-300-1698. Now, as a professional scholar, I'm used to doing research and to substantiating my positions. I offer courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning to college students for 35 years. Let me give you a resource where you can find substantiating evidence for several of the claims I've made about Hillary already during this program. I have a video show called The Real Deal on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and I've dealt with all kinds of issues. I particularly invite you to follow up by checking out The Real Deal, episode number 147. Hillary's Benghazi and How the West Destroyed Libya, where I interviewed Jimmy and Joanne Moriarty, who were in Libya because they developed a new organic process for disposing of organic waste that was environmentally 100% non-polluting, really marvelous. So they were there because Gaddafi was also green. I mean, he not only was going to turn all of North Africa into a veritable oasis, but he wanted to dispose of waste in proper fashion that didn't pollute the environment. This guy was really a remarkable figure, which may be the reason why the United Nations was about to bestow a humanitarian award upon him the week after, which I don't doubt affected Hillary with the timing. We got to get rid of Gaddafi now, because once the UN gives him an award for all the benefits he's bestowed upon the people of Libya, it will be much, much more difficult to take control of that nation for the benefit of the Rothschilds and others who are beneficiaries of Hillary Clinton and Bill. Here's another. I did an interview with Roger Stone about his book on the Clinton's War on Women on The Real Deal, episode number 102. So you want to go online, you can just do a search on The Real Deal, and you can abbreviate episode to EP pound sign 120 for Roger Stone, and in the case of the Moriartys, 137. So you want to do that, to understand the depth of the evidence that is involved here. It's simply overwhelming. Now, here's another feature that may make a difference to Bernie Sanders and his supporters, which is the following. Richard Charnin, who's a brilliant statistician and an expert on election theft, has been studying the exit polls in relation to the tabulated vote. And he has published a summary on Richard Charnin's blog. Richard Charnin, C-H-A-R-N-I-N, Richard Charnin's blog of five Democratic primaries, exit poll discrepancies, and win probabilities. He's given a summary of exit polls of the five March 15th Democratic primaries. Clinton won the average recorded vote on March 15th by 55% to 43%. The adjusted exit polls indicate that Sanders won 37% of Democrats, 64% of independents, 49% of males, and 38% of females. But the polls were forced to match the recorded vote, so he probably actually did better than that. The unadjusted exit polls indicate that Sanders actually won Missouri with an 80% probability and Illinois with a 70% probability. There was a 10% discrepancy in the Ohio exit poll from the recorded vote. The probability that the discrepancy was due to chance is 1 in 976. In other words, what Richard Charnin is reporting is that the polls, the voting has been rigged to benefit Hillary. I believe that once Sanders voters understand that they were stolen victories in Missouri and in Illinois, they may feel less charitable about Hillary. But that's a Clinton way. These are completely unscrupulous people who will do anything to win. They don't care about the American people. They care about themselves, which is why Clinton has acquired such a record as an abuser of women. It's, in my opinion, going to be very, very difficult for women who begin to appreciate Hillary's role as a facilitator of Bill's sexual abuse of other women, real women with real problems, Kathleen Wiley being one example, but there are many others. It's a disgusting record. You have to look at it. And bear in mind, the way that the polls are being viewed right now, there has been tens of millions of attack ads spent on Donald Trump. Tens of millions of attack ads on Donald Trump. He is probably the most vilified candidate in recent American political history. It's stunning. But he is winning in spite of it. And he is winning because he is opposed to the establishment. He's not indebted to the establishment. He's not under the control of the establishment. And that has terrified, petrified, frightened the establishment. We had a meeting today of big Republican fat cats discussing how to stop Donald Trump. And they're reduced to speculating about the possibility of running a write-in campaign. That's a no-brainer. That's not going to go anywhere. Or starting a third-party movement. It's virtually impossible. So that's not going to work. They can hope against hope that Trump will not gather the 1,237 votes he needs before the convention, because absolutely, once they enter the convention, the establishment is going to try to deprive him of success. And, of course, we've had the report that Donald Trump, when informed that that's the plan, that they're going to try to take away the nomination, even if he's very, very close, even if he's won more primaries and more caucuses and acquired more delegates than anyone else by even a considerable margin. He made the remark on passing. He thought that might cause riots. What he meant was there'd be such tremendous upset with his followers. He wasn't making a threat. He was observing what might very well happen. In other words, a prediction. And yet I saw one commentator after another, Chris Matthews, for example, talking about Trump making a threat. You have Lawrence O'Donnell, for whom my opinion has sunk into the sewer. This is guy's a complete shill for the left wing politically correct view of everything. He understands nothing, in my opinion. Rachel Maddow, similarly, I regard as a complete superficial, not quite a nitwit. She talks a great game, but she still believes that Lee Oswald shot JFK. She still believes 19 Arab terrorists brought us 9/11. She still believes that 20 children and 6 adults had died at Sandy Hook. She still believes that the Boston bombing was done by 2 young Muslim men, all of which is provably false. I published books on every one of these, 3 on JFK, 1 on 9/11 with another in the works, a recent one on the Boston bombing that was so explosive it had to be banned because it completely blew apart the rationale for the Obama gun control agenda. The whole idea was to create a cadre of anti-gun lobbyists who could spread out all over the country, who would have seemingly impeccable credentials because they lost children at Sandy Hook. But the book, which has 425 pages, 250 photographs, demonstrates conclusively that the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no children there, and therefore no one for Adam Lanza to have shot, and that there was no evacuation of other students, and it was done to promote gun control. We have 13 contributors to that book, including 6 PhD, current or retired college professors. We have done our homework. I myself had published 30 articles on Sandy Hook before I edited the book. One of my contributors, Dr. Eelman, who maintains a Fellowship of the Minds blog, had published 80. I brought together the best people on Sandy Hook. We include an interview where Sophia Smallstorm is talking with Paul Preston, who's a Los Angeles area superintendent of schools, who was so troubled by what he saw being broadcast from Sandy Hook, having supervised some of these drills himself, that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, all of whom confirmed to him that it had been a drill, that no children had died, and that it was done to promote gun control. So here you have Obama. This thing was orchestrated by Eric Holder, who traveled up to Connecticut and met with the governor just 2 weeks and a couple of days on the 27th of November before the event on the 14th of December, which was part of a two-day FEMA drill. We've even discovered the manual where they had a rehearsal on the 13th, which is why you had a sign that said everyone must check in, why you had boxes of bottled water and pizza cartons at the firehouse, why you had porta-potties in place, why you had so many wearing name tags on lanyards, why you had parents bringing children to the scene. Does anyone imagine that if this were an actual child shooting massacre, a parent would bring a child to the scene? I mean, it's obscene. But they brought the children down there because it was the rehearsal. It was the day before. It was a festive occasion. Bottled water, pizza. The name tags make perfect sense because FEMA has color-coded name tags that identify the role being played by everyone. It also explains why on the day of the event, there was no surge of EMTs into the building, no string of ambulances rushing the little bodies off to hospitals where they could be determined to be dead or alive. No medevac helicopter was called. No evacuation, as I mentioned before. We have looked at dash cam footage for the precise locations in the parking lot and times that the police maintained the evacuation was taking place. And guess what? There's nobody there. And because the example is so clear, although it's claimed you can't prove a negative, if you go into your living room right now and look for signs of the presence of elephant and find none, you're entitled to draw the negative conclusion there's no elephant in your living room. And if you go and look at the dash cam footage for the times and places that the children are supposed to be evacuated, and you don't find any children being evacuated, that means because no evacuation was taking place. That's a negative. It's provable, too. We prove it in the book. The school had been closed by 2008. It was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards. It suffered from severe damage from hurricanes. They were going to have to upgrade it to be compliant with Americans for Disability Act requirements. They were going to have to make it wheelchair accessible. They were going to have to put in the familiar blue and white signage. But they knew this upgrade would be incredibly expensive, that the school was already contaminated, so they abandoned the school. Wolfgang Halbig, who's a former Florida state trooper, a former U.S. Customs agent, a former school principal, and a nationally recognized school expert, has learned during FOIA hearings from a security expert under oath that they last upgraded the security system at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2007. That's perfectly consistent with the school having been closed by 2008 because it was going to be too expensive to upgrade. He also obtained sworn testimony from Patricia LaLorda, who is the first selectman of Newtown, which makes her the equivalent of the mayor, acknowledging that the sign "everyone must check in" was placed there by Homeland Security. Think about it. What would Homeland Security have been doing putting a sign like that in place? You don't understand until you read the manual, which I made, the very first appendix of the book, and it says everyone must check in. And, of course, it's a standard part of a FEMA operation that they provide restrooms and refreshments, hence the bottled water, hence the pizza cartons, hence the porta-potties. Wolfgang attempted to learn who had placed the porta-potties in position, which the agencies refused to provide for the reason that it would have revealed they were put in place on the 13th, which was the day before, and blown their cover. There was so much confusion by participants about the dates that many put up websites for donations on the 13th, the day before the shooting was supposed to have occurred. And even Adam Lanza's date of death was officially recorded in the Social Security Death Index as having occurred on the 13th, making his feat in shooting 20 children and 6 adults the following day all the more remarkable. Now, most of the world has seen a photograph taken by Newtown B photographer and associate editor Shannon Hicks showing a policewoman escorting what looks like a string of children away from the school. And it's taken in the parking lot of the school. But they haven't seen another photograph also taken by Shannon Hicks that shows that there's a string of parents there with their arms folded, casually looking on, and that the children have been rearranged in the sequence so that in the photograph that went out, the first child in the sequence was a little boy wearing a dark sweater and blue jeans. But in the earlier photograph taken with a string of parents, it's a little girl in a pink sweater and a short skirt. They actually stopped to rearrange the children to get a better shot. I mean, this is outrageous as it gets. This was such striking proof. The whole thing was a concoction of fabrication and a fraud that I put both photographs on the back of the cover of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which, as I say, was so explosive in relation to the Obama gun control agenda that they had it banned. The book went on sale at Amazon.com on the 22nd of October. It already sold nearly 500 copies by the 19th of November when it was banned. They gave no reason. They said review the guidelines. But what's the point? The book had already passed the guidelines when it was published on the 22nd of October. Not only, however, does it blow apart the whole official narrative by proving the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no children there, that it was a two-day FEMA drill, and that it was done to promote gun control, but I included as an appendix a study of multiple countries showing that when guns are banned, crime goes up. The very first of those studies showed that the rise in crime in England and Wales when they banned guns was so dramatic that the government had to resort to the drastic action of the number of police on the street to bring more guns back in order to control the incredible surge in guns. And indeed, it turns out that Obama has been lying to us massively about the prevalence of gun violence, which has been dropping steadily for the last 20 years. I had, of course, a special interest in this and discovered that from 1993 to 2015, deaths from gun violence per 100,000 people dropped by more than 50%, from 7.0 to 3.4. And injuries from gun violence, non-fatal, per 100,000 dropped even more dramatically from 726.3 in 1993 to 174.8. That's a staggering drop. So what is Obama doing talking to us about the necessity to have gun control because gun crimes are going up. It's so stunning that after San Bernardino, where, by the way, we discovered the Craigslist ad for extras, where they were reporting on the first, going live on the second, good pay, transportation, food, some speaking roles, why so many people were just fooling around in San Bernardino. They didn't know what else to do. They weren't trained. They weren't paramedics. Indeed, if you want to see a fascinating study about the violations of standard procedure at both Sandy Hook and San Bernardino, you want to go to the real deal and use the title Staging Attacks from Sandy Hook to San Bernardino, which features a highly qualified paramedic. And it was just astonishing to me how one violation of protocol after another was taking place because, of course, these weren't real emergency events. These weren't real people. Just as you had no surge of ambulance rush EMTs at Sandy Hook, you had no surge of ambulances or surge of EMTs or rush of ambulances in San Bernardino, nor did you have at the Boston bombing, which anything is even a more obvious case because we have video feature where you can hear the piece in the background on bullhorns calling out, "This is a drill! There's a drill!" We see tweets from the Boston Globe saying demonstration bomb is going to be set off during the marathon, and a second saying that a bomb is going to be set off in 1 minute across from the library for the benefit of bomb squad activities, and lo and behold, 1 minute later, a bomb goes off in front of the Boston Public Library. As a former Marine Corps artillery officer, I can tell you, these were puff pieces. These weren't serious explosives. They couldn't have damaged anyone. And in fact, what we have when we peer through the smoke is bodies that are missing parts, arms and legs, but there is no blood. As Lorraine Day, who is the head of trauma surgery at San Francisco General Hospital for 25 years has observed, this is a physiological impossibility. If those limbs had actually been blown off, there would be blood all over the place. In fact, the blood only starts showing up later. It's Hollywood blood. It's fake blood. It comes out of tubes. It's orangish red, and it retains its color. Nathan Foulkes, who's a Hollywood producer and director, was the first to identify one of the key players, a tall guy in a cowboy hat whose name is Carlos Arredondo, as an actor he had cast in one of his own films. Carlos plays a key role in rushing away a man lying on the ground who is supposed to have lost both of his legs beneath the knees, where with injuries like that, what you have to do is keep them prone in the hope that you can apply tourniquets because the bleed out will render you unconscious in 1 minute, dead in two. The last thing you would do with a bona fide victim of these effects would be to put them in a wheelchair, and yet that's what's done. When you look through the smoke, you see there's a man in a hoodie who's attaching a false extension of a bone, a false prosthesis with a bone extension to make his injuries look more horrifying. Well, when they put him into the wheelchair and roughed him away, the vibrations were so great that they caused this false prosthesis to fall off and be reattached. Nathan was the first to suggest to me that actually the smoke had probably come from a smoke machine. And would you believe we've been able to locate it? So they were using amputee actors, fake blood, Hollywood blood, a smoke machine, which led me to subtitle the book, and nobody died in Boston either, state-sponsored terrorism with Hollywood special effects. You can find both these books now available. We found a new distributor, a new printer, at moonrockbooks.com. And I emphasize, because you have to realize the enormity of the lies and deceptions you've been sold by the Barack Obama administration. ISIS, for example, was a creation of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Obama had been stalled in attacking Syria because the Russians presented a 50-page dossier showing the chemical attacks weren't performed by the Assad government, but rather by the rebels. They appear to have been provided by Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia, who's so close with the Bush family that he's known as Bandar Bush. Obama wanted to lob cruise missiles into Syria, which would have brought about massively more casualties and been a violation of international law than had been caused by the gas attacks that were staged and orchestrated. So they had to fall back, regroup, and create a new strategy. And that new strategy was to create this terrorist band known as ISIS, to create a buffer zone to put pressure on Assad. I published about it, how we know ISIS was made in the USA. Check it out. I give you 12 key points defending it. This is the reason why Obama has been reluctant to attack ISIS. We have drone pilots leaving the military in droves because Obama will not attack ISIS. He won't attack ISIS because he's guilty. He feels guilty for killing people when he created ISIS itself. This is why when Donald Trump comes out and forthrightly says, we're going to destroy ISIS, where the Russians, by the way, up to this point in time, have been doing a pretty good job, because between February 1st and February 4th, they conducted no less than 900 attacks on ISIS. When Donald Trump says, we're going to take out ISIS, that makes the establishment cringe. ISIS is their creation. It's also helping to promote the Israeli agenda of creating a greater Israel that will dominate the Middle East from the Tigris, Euphrates to the Nile. That's what's going on here. The Zionists, for those reasons as well, are lining up against Trump. The establishments are lining up against Trump. The Republican leaders would rather Hillary Clinton be elected president than support Donald Trump, which is, from an ordinary citizen's point of view, simply insane. Donald Trump is bringing an intangible to a political election that is incredibly rare in American political history, which is enthusiasm. Think about it. Bernie's being cheated. Bernie has more in common with Donald Trump policy-wise than he has with Hillary Clinton. Everyone out there has to think about this, because we're engaged in a titanic battle over the control of our own country and its future destiny. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, thanking you for listening.
I am officially running for President of the United States, and we are going to make our country great again. Time magazine last week did an incredible cover story. They said it's a movement, and that's what it is. It's an incredible movement with incredible people. Incredible people.
I continue to believe Mr. Trump will not be president.
They are going to people, showing videos of Donald Trump.
It interferes with reason.
Unhinged mobs assaulted people, attacked police, tore up signs, blocked ambulances, fired guns in the air, and threatened to rape women.
The liberal media and Ted Cruz and Brent's boy Marco Rubio are all blaming Donald Trump.
Frankly, Donald has created a very toxic environment, and it's really in dividing people.
And liberals are always first in line to try to restrict the First Amendment rights of others. And I want to say a word about these other spineless GOP candidates. You know, instead of exploiting this situation to try to prop up their failing campaigns, what they ought to be doing is standing up and saying, you know, we may not agree with everything Trump says, we may not even like the way he says it, but we are standing in solidarity with his First Amendment rights. They won't do that because they're too weak to do that, which is why they're losing.
Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research And we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show, and it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.